This is At the Races with Steve Beck.
We're back. Second half, thanks to Marcus Hirsch for the visit. We'll follow up with Steve Anderson. I'm still trying to firm up the Gear Kink and Tamaro visits. Luckily, I saved that time for hour three, so we should be all right.
I see you've done this before.
Yeah,
you can anticipate the scheduling.
You gotta be a little, you know, a little fluid here and there. All right, we'll get Steve Anderson in, and we'll talk to Steve, get his storylines about the Del Mar meet. I tried to scare up David Jerkins. We'll get David later in the meet. Josh Rubenstein and some of the other team, of course, at Del Mar.
Are you coming to Del Mar this year?
No, I don't see how. I don't see how we can do it.
I didn't think so.
It's just too much. Steve Anderson, though, he's there. He's ready for Del Mar 2024. Steve, good morning.
Good morning. Welcome to the summer in California.
It's a little weird. It's a Saturday kickoff. It's a little later than usual, even though we've got an early Labor Day. What was there any detail about how and why this happened the way it did?
The property that Del Mar races on,
right,
is owned by the state, and the San Diego County Fair, which is a major event, is held there in late June, and typically ends on July 4. But the way the calendar unfolded this year, the event went through Sunday, July 7. So there was extra days behind what was typically the closing day of the fair before they were able to make this massive transition of the property from the fair facility into a racing facility. It's really kind of remarkable. I went down there once a day after the fair ended, and it really made you think, there's no way on earth they'll have this ready in 10 days. And yet they do. One of the most important elements of that transformation is the preparation of the main track, just to make sure that it's, you know, in horse racing condition. So in that regard, that takes a little bit of time. They decided they would open on Saturday this year to give themselves an additional 24 hours. They only started workouts on the track on Wednesday. So this is probably a wise move to have a Saturday start. They're still racing 31 days during the Del Mar meeting. They've added a Thursday in after Labor Day. And if memory serves correct, the aqueduct season will not have started yet after Saratoga.
Right.
So Del Mar will have a day in early September when they will be one of the primary racetracks operating in the United States. And they will have a four-day closing week last year, leading to September 8th's final day. Last year, they had a three-day final week leading to their closing day. So it's a little tiny bit of a different schedule. The biggest change is, of course, there's no racing today. And tomorrow, there's an 11-race program.
Hey, Steve Hammer here. Do you ever remember a Saturday opening?
No, because I wasn't alive in 1953.
Okay, so.
Sorry. That is the old, I think back there was one in the 30s, and then the most recent one was in the 50s. I mean, for decades, it was a Wednesday. Then it's shifted to Thursday. And then in the last few years, they've had a few Friday opening days. So it's changed over the years. I would imagine, and this will be discussed next month, that the 2025 meeting, if the calendar works out, would revert to a Friday opening day. So we'll have to wait and see how that plays out. But it's an interesting situation. They open on a Saturday, so they don't race today. So last year, they did $21 million in handle on a Friday, and this year they won't do that. They had a huge, you would anticipate for an opening day that's pretty much the focus of the country on that particular afternoon. They would have a massive handle day. Well, today they won't do that. So instead, tomorrow, they compete with excellent programs at Saratoga and Monmouth for the attention of the national bet.
I said that to Hammer at the start of the show, that the vying for the betting dollar tomorrow is going to be fierce.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, you follow what you follow, no matter where you live or in the United States. You enjoy racing at tracks that you enjoy, so there's going to always be some you know, provincial benefit, but particularly with post times in California, 5 o'clock Eastern, that helps them immensely as soon as the major tracks in the East finish their cards.
But unlike you mentioned, I mean, you mentioned, and unlike other tracks, they're at the mercy of that fair, which I believe is the turned into be the biggest grossing fair in the country. I mean, country.
I would
in
say
the state.
Probably among them. Among them. Don't forget the Texas State Fair.
No, I meant the state of California. I think it's number one.
No, it's huge in Cal. It's huge in Cal. And in that regard, it gets what it wants.
Yes, it does.
Well, horse players will get what they want, the steady diet of turf and juveniles. We talked to Brad earlier this morning, Steve, and we got a little of the juvenile conversation going. From your perspective, talk about your advances going into the meet.
Well, I've been following pretty much the entire programs for both days, and as you mentioned, it is turf heavy. These are the first grass races run in California since June 16th. So, in that regard, there is the annual pent-up demand for to run a turf horse, particularly in the summertime when you're starting to see a lot of these horses, not necessarily two-year-olds this weekend, but it won't be long before you'll see juveniles on the grass at Dilmar. So there's a wide array of categories that will be racing on the turf. Last year and the year before, they ran 125 grass races, and they ran 286 races total last year. So the turf racing will be about 40 to 45% of the program, so it'll be constant, and particularly this weekend, as mentioned, without having had grass racing since the closure of Santa Anita's spring meeting on June 16th.
Yeah, it's amazing how, not just in California, but nationally, how turf racing has just exploded. I have some stats I'll bring one time, but I would say in 15 years, the turf core usage has probably doubled.
Yes, and then, it used to be a niche.
It did, and I don't know if I was trying to think. It was a combination of dirt racing was king, and probably a little bit of, and I'm guilty of this too, is kind of babying the turf courses, and maybe they, we would run one or two during the week, and three was it, and maybe four. If you ran four, you were really going over the line. But knowing how we had good, very good guys out there taking care of them, but probably could have pushed it a little bit more. But really wasn't asked to do it at the time. Everyone was satisfied with the mixture, mostly dirt and turf, and now it's just shifted all over the place.
Yeah, there's a high demand now for it, as you mentioned, and I think it's the higher quality of racing. In fact, what's fascinating about this particular weekend at Del Mar is there's an allowance race at a mile on turf to start Sunday's program that, for all intents and purposes, is a grade three, maybe even a grade two. In fact, of the six runners in the field, four of them have come out of graded stakes in their last starts, including Watsonville, who won the Mathis Mile for three-year-olds at Santa Anita in December, and Exalted, who's trying to get his career back on path after a win in the Grade 1 Shoemaker a year ago in May, but only fifth in the Wise Dan in his first start this year a few weeks ago at Churchill. So he's a horse that that is looked upon as a high-profile runner, but needs to show it.
Well, you know what? It you mentioned the break and any type of break, but especially on the turf, it's been a month, so it's great to be able to offer different places for these horses to run, and then hopefully they all meet together in a stake or two later in the meet. So it's great to see that. You don't see that too often, starting a weekend off with a great race like that.
That's true.
Steve, I mentioned David Jerkins, who was touch and go to be able to visit with us. You talked to David, and the numbers that you quoted, upwards of 1,900 horses on the grounds, plus St. Louis Ray within an easy ride, and then some training centers. So it feels like there's a big horse population. One thing that you noted at the end of your meet preview that I thought was interesting, less presence of Ship and Win horses, but the Northern Cal population that has been such a bone of contention and discussion point with Golden Gate's closure. I thought that David's reference to Northern Cal presence was worth discussing here.
Here are the names: Steve Sherman, Jamie Thomas, Bill McLean, Andy Mathis, Tim McKenna, O.J. Horicki, Reed France, Matt Troy, and Gloria Haley. Now, nationally, they may not be names that trigger recollections. Regionally, however, they all have a role in the sport, various levels in California. This Del Mar meeting over the next 8 weeks comes at a time that's ideal for people such as the ones I just mentioned to send down a division of horses, perhaps their top 20% of their runners and maybe a few others, to try to see how they fit into the Southern California program. Right now, it's Cal Expo at Sacramento this weekend and next, followed by three weekends at Santa Rosa. Then after that, it goes to the northernmost racing in the state, Ferndale, which is a very tiny track, runs very modest races, let's put it politely. Therefore, there's no grass racing in Northern Cal anymore except for Santa Rosa. So if you have a grass horse in the north of some quality, bring it. If you've got an allowance class or a couple of nice young maidens, those are the ones that also wind up coming to Del Mar from those barns. You mentioned a moment ago that the absence of ship and wind horses, but what isn't taking place are a decent number of out-of-state stables coming in. Kent Sweezy's here, Herman Lenski's back, there are others involved too. Todd Fincher's brought a larger than normal group of horses compared to what he has brought in recent years. That's all true. What you find with the ship and wind program, which is a Del Mar bonus system that awards owners and who have horses that have been racing in other circuits or even overseas, bring them into California, and there's a bonus prize to some purse money over the course of the season for those horses. What you find is people who are based in California going out and finding horses around the world, really, Europe and across the United States, and buying those horses and bringing them to California, pre-existing California stables. The whole ship and win idea certainly was predicated on trying to attract leading stables from around the nation to relocate to Del Mar for the summer. What it really has become, in addition to that, as described, is a lure to get people who are already invested in California racing to buy horses from other venues.
Because it's great point, Steve, because it's not the trainer doesn't have to be from out of state. Just the horse has to have made their last start out of state.
Yeah, and there's other criteria involved, like a first-time starter, a maiden first-time starter that has been that has been trained out of state does not qualify. You know, you have to have a certain time period since that horse is his last start for it to qualify. And there are a few other parameters involved. But by and large, it's designed to, you know, horses into the state and keep them here, try to help field size on a circuit that at times has struggled difficulties in trying to fill races. Del Mar has been a bit of an exception. They had 9.1 runners per race in 2022, one of the highest numbers they've ever had, if not a record. Last year, it fell down to 8.9 runners per race, a still very good number, all told. And that includes both turf and dirt. The turf numbers were higher. But the numbers have been strong at this meeting, as you would expect for a track that has the highest purses of the year in California. You know, has the location adjacent to the seaside, and the dates run in late summer with mild weather. For the most part, they're supposed to succeed.
Well, let's get some success. Some thoughts, Steve. How about a couple of opinions? We talked San Clemente, and we talked earlier with Brad also. Official long-running start of the meet in the Oceanside. what are some of your spots for the weekend?
Well, one of the races that I'm interested in is the San Clemente. It's going to be a very fascinating race, a high-quality race, which I think is rather wide open. And I'm eager to see what the Jeff Mullins-trained filly, Invincible Molly, can do in her first start at a mile. She's 15-1 on the morning line. Edward Maldonado takes them out for the first time on a filly that has won three times, twice in England and last year, and also won her last start in a 6-furlong allowance race at Santa Anita in the middle of May. Mullins hoped to run her in June, early June, in a 1-mile allowance race, but said that the race didn't go. So she comes in off of a lengthy layoff, more than 9 weeks. I think she might be a long shot to consider in the San Clemente Stakes. So I think I'll probably have a few few dollars on her as well. Looking forward to the Oceanside. It's always a fun race to watch, except it's a hectic race to watch because they're all trying to be in the same spot, about 3/8 of a mile to 1/4 mile from the finish, which is 3 lengths behind the pace and stalking and ready for a big run. This particular race, I think, might not have as much drama to it this year. I think King of Ghostwood, who has really moved forward for trainer Phil D'Amato as the season has progressed, going unbeaten in 3 starts since arriving from Ireland, is a deserving favorite. He's tactical. He can be near the front. This is his first start at a mile, but I think he should be very handy for Antonio Friesu. I expect King of Ghostwood to run a very, very big race in the Oceanside Stakes. He's been his target for months now, so let's see what he can produce.
Very good. Anywhere else?
And like I said on a moment ago, that race that starts the program on Sunday is a fascinating race, arguably deeper than the Wicker Stakes later in the day. And I would like to see what Watsonville can do. He's been working forwardly for trainer Mark Glatt over the last several months. There was some preliminary discussions about even considering taking him out of California for his comeback race. But that's a horse that I expect to have a big 2024, rather. He's a 4-year-old colt who did win the Mathis Mile and has won 3 of his last 5. Expect him to have a big start to his year in a very tough race, as mentioned, in the allowance race, first race mile. He'll have some pace to follow, I think, and he'll be handy, but he should be one to follow.
Steve Anderson, as always, appreciate the opportunity to visit, and looking forward to a great Del Mar. We'll check in as the season unfolds.
It should be a fun summer. Thanks, guys.
Steve Anderson, Steve. Everybody, and does such a super job. Let's get to Scully and get his opinions.
That you said Scully, that means everybody get your pencil out.
Yeah, we got plenty more handicapping. Ron Gierkings, Ron and I just exchanged a note. He heard us. We just couldn't hear him. So we'll get to Ron in a little bit as well to discuss the rest of the Woodbine slate, the Oaks, and the Play Trial, and the Trillium as well. And Nick Tamaro confirmed as well for the end of the show for 11:45.
Have to put in for an extension.
Who did I say? Oh, Scully. There we go. So let's get James going, and we'll see what he's doing. And there we go. Oh, you're just giving me that to just have a sip of? Are you okay? Jersey Shore Barbie making an appearance. I got it. I'll drink the water. Thank you. Thanks, honey. James Scully. Good morning.
Good morning, Steve.
Does Gigi harass you to drink water and hydrate?
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Oh yeah, for sure.
All right.
I mean, a little bit. You know, I drink a lot of water anyway, though, Steve. So. She's not walking up and putting bottles though in my face.
Well, that's what just happened here. That's exactly what happened. You nailed it. That's so great. Twin Spires weekend preview, and boy, James, before we look at any spots, Del Mar opening tomorrow, Woodbine Plate advance, you know, the Plate preview show tomorrow. ABR is doing a feature from there. You've got obviously just the regular Saratoga action and Haskell Day. Twin Spire players have just a smorgasbord.
Yes, absolutely. We have a 15% profit boost on win exacta and superfecta, win exacta, trifecta, and superfecta wagers on all races on the Haskell Day card Saturday at Monmouth. We're going to be doing that, you know, all summer when there's Breeders' Cup Challenge races being offered at a track, and the Haskell's a win in your end for the Classic. So players, Twin Spires players, can get a 15% boost on winning tickets. We've got the Del Mar Daily Double Down Contest. That's our first 25% promotion for promotion for Del Mar, 15% promotion, I believe. And then at Woodbine, we've got a hit it and split it. We have got a 15% odds boost on Sunday's card. We got Ellis Park leaderboards. We got an Ellis Park profit boost and much, much more. We've got offers for a ton of thoroughbred tracks and harness tracks. Be sure you go to twinspires.com and opt in.
Exactly right. Not to mention all of the juries and all of the video analysis that just...
Yeah, we just celebrated our one-year anniversary. We started up doing the juries on Thursday afternoons, previewing races over the weekend, and then on Tuesdays we do roundtable where we discuss what happened and analyze the past results. So, yeah, it's been great. We've been doing it. Ashley Anderson, Vance Hansen, Darren Zuccalli, Nick Tamro has helped out, and myself, and we love doing those videos on twistfires.com.
Hey, James, it's Hammer here. I just was checking in here with Steve at Monmouth.
Hey, Hammer.
Just to go back, so if you're using Twin Spires, you get 15% bonus on every winning bet.
Yeah, win, exacta, tries, and supers. You got to opt in for it, but yes, we got that going on Saturday. It's our Breeders' Cup Challenge Profit Boost, and we're doing it. The race has to have they have to have like a minimum number of starters. So if you get a scratch depleted race, it might not be eligible. But yes, all eligible races, we're going to have a 15% profit boost for those wagers.
That's pretty healthy. I mean, it's free money. Exactly. If you're going to play, is that the first time you've done that, or I've not been paid attention?
No, we've been doing it. We did it. We started it up with the Breeders' Cup Challenge this summer, so we had it on the closing day of Churchill Downs, and we'll be having it for Saratoga and Del Mar in the weeks to come as well.
All right, that's a great offer,
James. Where are we starting?
All right, we'll start at Monmouth. I'll hit a couple of stake spots I like. In race number five, the matchmaker for Phillies and Mares on the turf. Olivia Moralda made her U.S. debut in allowance at Keeneland on Saturday late in the meet and just got a troubled trip. She didn't get clear till late, came rolling. I really liked her runner-up effort to Anna Said on the stretch out to a mile and an eighth last time. I thought that was a real positive effort. You have some Chad Brown horses in here who could take more money. Obviously, Delhay and Maman June, I think, are both candidates, and maybe even Boot Cachet with Frankie Dettori. But all of those mares, Delhay and Maman June, have never, haven't been to 9 furlong distance in the U.S. or winless at it. And Boot Cachet is like 0-3 at or about the distance. So they're all a little unproven at 9 furlongs, whereas I think this Olivia Moralda is going to thrive. So I like her in the matchmaker.
7-2 on the three. And of course, Walden only shows up here because of the off the turf the other day at Saratoga.
Right. Yeah, Wednesday she was entered in a good allowance. I liked her there, but all those races came off. It's good to see them avoid the rain, though, the rest of this weekend. Looking ahead to race number nine, obviously Arzak is the one to beat in there, but he had to scratch from the turf sprint at Churchill Downs on Derby weekend, and he came back off of a two-month layoff, and I just thought that was a real big effort in the Jaipur. I'm a little worried about it maybe taking a little bit of starch out of him. He's still the horse to beat, obviously. I think he's going to be a lot lower than 5-2. But I look at a Logan. I liked his, I thought his effort in the Jaipur was all right, got a little got tired by the top of the stretch and weakened in the stretch, but he came back with a solid effort at Belmont. He has two starts over under him, and he loves Mama's turf. He ran a big race in this race last year to win it, so he's 6-1 on the morning line. I like Logan a little bit in the Wolf Hill.
Well, and that's our man, Ned Allard, that we were lauding earlier.
Yes. And, yeah, I first heard about him a few years ago at Pimlico, really, or maybe 5 or 7 years ago. I don't know. But, yeah, he came along, he's a good young horseman. In the Monmouth Cup, race number 10, mile and an eighth distance, I like Highland Falls is going to be a key in multi-race wagers. I do hope Tapid Trice comes back in this spot. But, you know, I look at this race as the timing was better for him to run here than the Whitney, than to come back in the Jockey Club Gold Cup, which is ultimately, I believe, Brad Cox thinks 10 furlongs is going to be his best distance. I think that's going to be his prep for the Breeders' Cup Classic. And I look for a strong and he's going to ship in Idiomatic and Highland Falls to run in these stakes. So I like Highland Falls a lot in that race. I know, you know, he'll contend for favoritism, but I'm going to play him as a single in multi-race bets.
Sounds good.
In the UN, I thought Get Smokin's comeback. Get Smokin thrived in my mind when Mark Cassie stretched him out last fall in those two races in the Kentucky Downs Preview Cup and the Kentucky Downs Turf Cup itself. Relished added ground. His speed was really good in those races. He came back with a solid, I thought, comeback or tuna for this spot. Obviously, I think drawing inside a number so high, of number eight so high, is a big advantage. That horse could show speed, but, you know, I'm looking back over his last 14 starts since last summer, and only 7 of 14 of those was he on the lead, and Get Smokin's dealt with speed before. My main take in this UN, guys, is I'm against Webslinger and Far Bridge. I'm going to fade both of them in my bets, in my multi-race bets. I'm not keen on Far Bridge at the 1 3/8 distance. He just has to prove himself at that distance from that far outside post. And I thought Webslinger, he got by Segoe in the stretch, looked like he was going to win by open lens, and that rival came back on him. And, you know, it was close at the wire. So I thought I still don't think this is his optimal distance. I'm going to include horses like Data Man, Adhamo, and even Starting Over in multi-race bets if Sohai does go out there and compromise my pick's chances. But I'm going to look to Beck Get Smokin' to win. He's 12-1 on the morning line.
We just had this conversation and with I like that. I think it all depends.
Man, I was in, I missed it.
Well, it was Marcus and about the, you know about. What's going to happen? I mean, if Chatterpaw's here, Sohai can basically, you know, contends with Get Smokin' for the lead. And if not, if he doesn't come, Get Smokin's loose.
Yeah, exactly. And but even if he comes, I mean, I'm still like, hey, if he's out there like tracking him in second and Get Smokin' is comfortable doing it, I still think he has a chance to steal this race. Wire to wire. I think, you know, like I said, I look at him and his best races were his last two races last year, and that was a solid comeback effort. So he's eligible to have more to offer for Cassie this year.
I'll tell you one thing. Given the heat, given the temperatures we've had here all week, that turf course has got to be baked hard.
Yeah, so that'd be good. That'd be good for speed.
Yep.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
And in the Haskell, you know, I like Mind Frame. I think that I look at Dornick, and to me, you know, he doesn't have to win this race. He just needs a solid effort because he's going to be keyed up for the Travers in a sense. So, you know, he loves Saratoga, and I just think this cutback to 1 8 is going to favor Mind Frame. That was a really good effort going 10 furlongs in his third career start. He got a little tired in that stretch, but he still. You know, kept trying hard to the wire. So I like Mind Frame to earn his first stakes win in the Haskell.
That seems to be the prevailing sentiment.
At Saratoga, my best bet on Saturday's card is in race number 8, number 7, Arrow Smash. I liked how this horse won, broke his maiden last year at Saratoga by open lens. I liked his entry-level allowance win to conclude last season. And I thought his comeback effort, believe me, he just got a little bit, he got uncorked a little bit too late in the stretch, and Champlin got the run on him. But I think Champlin is a really nice up-and-coming one-speed and sprinter for Greg Foley. He's in on Sunday in the Jeff Hall Memorial Stakes at Ellis Park. He's in there against Happy as a Choice and Me Song. But I think Aerosmash improves off that comeback effort and runs a big race here. I mean, Phil Bauer, he's got two starts. He got a win in a second. You look at these Kentucky people, Al Stahl, three starts in a second, two wins in a second from three starts. Amos, two for five. Sheree DeVoe has three wins, a second, and two thirds from seven starts. Tyler Caffleon, after winning three races yesterday, is tied for the lead in the jockey standings. So I look for Aerosmash to run a real big race in race eight. And in the finale, I'm really against this favored entry with one of those AE, but this Factor Analysis is a hanger. He's a dead closer. There's no speed in this turf race, or not much speed. I like number three, Artem Puss, 8-1 on the morning line with John Velasquez for Todd Pletcher.
All right.
And, I also mentioned that Jeff Hall Memorial. I'm of the big opinion that these up-and-coming sprinters have a big chance this fall. Like Me Song, he ran second in the Grade 1 Churchill Downs. I'm going to try to beat him. I like Champlin and Happy as a Choice in that race. I can't wait to see Subrogate run it at Saratoga. I'm looking for these up-and-coming sprint types in that division. Today at Saratoga, my last second Friday push is going to come in race number two. Skylander. Or is it Skylander? No, not Skylander.
Skylander's in the fourth.
I like number two in race two.
Scratch.
Magic.
Scratch.
Oh, Magic 8-Ball Scratch.
Scratched.
Gosh almighty. All right. Well, I thought the five and the AE scratch, but I missed the deuce scratch.
Hold on. Let me look back. But I just did the scratches and sent Andy's. Maybe I got it wrong. Maybe I got that wrong. Hold on. Second. No, the 5 and the 10, you're right. You're absolutely right.
Yeah.
The 5 and the 10.
Yeah. I like Magic 8-Ball. Let me tell you, Steve, this 3-year-old filly by Upstart, she was 6-5 in her debut against Maiden Special 8 rivals at Belmont last year.
Yeah.
Didn't work out on the main track for her. Her first turf race was November 18th at Aqueduct, and she had a troubled trip in that race. The runner-up and third-place finisher won their next start. She came back last time. There was a 99-1 shot that went.
That's my fault. That's...
She was under a hammer hold in second and won convincingly and really relished the turf. That was her first non-troubled start on the grass. I think she's going to improve upon it. She's the speed with Javier Castellano, the 2 in race 2 at Saratoga.
Interesting. And 5-1 in a strangely...
She's a 5-1 co. She's a 5-1 co. Four choice.
Right, and Wings Like Eagles, and I picked From Hello, the 3, Bruce Brown, but Chad's got that Dia Matrona, as well, and I thought this was contentious. It's a fun card today. You get into the second half of the card. Those two allowances, the 8th and the 9th, are terrific. You got a pair of maiden, really three maiden races that are fun. There's all kinds of things. There's a huge scratch. And in fact, I should have brought this up with Marcus. There's a huge scratch in the opener. Jack Sisterson and Craig Burnick were going to unveil Gene and Jude. And for those of you that are Chicagoland faithful, the great hot dog stand, Gene and Jude's, where you go and you get the hot dog, drag it through the garden, and then the French fries right on top. It's all wrapped up in wax paper. Gene and Jude, I cannot wait for the debut. I'm going to have to get Burnick back on
That's a good little maiden race. That Governor Sam, that Royal Palm Juvenile Stakes had like 8 hopefuls for Royal Ascot in it, and this filly's 4-1 in there.
Yep.
Or this colt is 4-1, and he showed good speed and just tired in the stretch. He dueled with the winner, and then this Vekoma filly for Christophe Coman.
No evidence.
No evidence. Coman, his horse, that 9, that first her yesterday for him, I forget her name, but she took money. But, man, I loved Will Rain in there, and the other Cassie beat me. Mark Cassie had 2 maiden winners last week at Saratoga. He had 5 maiden winners in North America last week.
Yep.
And then yesterday in the, 5.5 furlong, 2-year-old filly, maiden special weight at Churchill, he runs 1-2. So that guy's horses are firing a little bit. I even took a look at Pounce. I know Oversubscribe looks really tough in that race, but I thought that was an interesting effort last time. She doesn't have to be on the lead. She can sit close. I mean, she ran her best race, arguably, in the Here Comes the Bride when she was, rated. So that filly comes off, a solid third and could be dangerous for him.
Good. No doubt about Cassie. Hitting on all cylinders. Big time.
Yep. James. All right, guys. Hey, best of luck to y'all. Thanks so much.
Thank you, James Scully, everybody. And there's a variety of opinions. We appreciate it. We're going to try to swing back to Ron Gierkink, and we'll give this another shot. And I don't know. I hope Rogers, up north of the border, Rogers Communication is the bane of every mobile users' existence.
Really?
Oh, terrible. They're monopoly, and it's a fortune. Cost everybody a fortune. It's just crazy. So let's, there we go. That's going to be the charm.
Bingo.
Ron Gierkink, good morning.
Hey, Steve. How are you?
Well, I'm good. Well, Rick Hammerly's with us as well.
Hi, Ron.
Hi, Rick. How's it going?
Fantastic. Glad to get you on. We were wondering if you were playing hide and seek with us, but I guess it was our problem, huh?
Somewhere out somewhere.
I think it was on your end. I could hear you perfectly, so this is take 2.
There exactly. We well, it's the first go-round as we work our way toward August and the King's Plate. Ron, I'm looking forward to being up there leading up Thursday and Friday. I had a plate. It'll be my first. And the Woodbine Oaks and the Plate Trial, which really drew a narrow field. I mean, usually it's a big full gate, but just a 6-pack, and maybe the Oaks is as productive as usual when it comes to feeding into the plate.
Yeah, they traditionally do well in the plate. The things that come out of the Oaks, and this doesn't look like the greatest. Oaks field ever, that's why it's such a big field. Everybody's taking a shot. I mean, that said, last year's Oaks field didn't look that great either, and Elysian Field emerged from the race to actually get a second in the plate and do very well. And Fashionably Fab ran in the Oaks last year, and he's going for a 6 stakes win in a row on the Saturday card in the Trillion Stakes. So, this Oaks is wide open, and Kevin Attard has 5 entered, believe it or not, with a pretty good chance to win it, and he has won it 2 of the last 3 years.
Flesh him out a little bit, I thought it was actually a notable storyline in itself. How big Attard's operation is getting, and he was one of the names. In fact, a couple of weeks ago, Ron, when Naira announced the plans to run exclusively on the new Tapita at Belmont in the winter, Attard was sought out, and he made it clear that he thought it would be a winter string location for him.
Yeah, I think it's definitely a possible place for him to go. I think I might send one down for the winter if I find the right horse to go down for the winter. Yeah, you never know. I mean, the purse should be really good, and I think it's definitely a possibility. So Kevin's got, I like War Painter in the Oaks. She worked head-to-head with Moira on June 29th. Really good work. She came back with two more really good works where she ran down some company. She's coming off an Ontario Sired Allowance win. It was not that fast, but she's had hanging tendencies. So this was sort of more a clear-cut win. And the way she's worked going into the Oaks, I prefer her. And Emma Wilson's picked up the mount on her from Amora, who obviously has gone to Del Mar for the summer. So there's a lot of horses running this weekend with that Kimura has been riding, a lot of live ones that he has lost the mount on because he's left down. So the actual morning line favorite is another Kevin Attard horse, Caitlin or Greatness. Switched from Pletcher to Kevin recently and won an allowance over older horses going 7.5 on the inner turf 2 weeks ago. So she's running back quick. She has no she has no synthetic experience, but she did work over the Tapita the other day, so that should be a plus. But I think going back in 2 weeks, I think she's a bit of a vulnerable favorite, assuming that she does go favorite, because this is a very tough line to make on this 14 horse field.
You know, of the Attards, I do want to ask you about two or three of these. My Girl Della, the Medaglia d'Oro, that took a, even though she got beat last. The race in June. What's notable is she did it against open company, and now back against restricted company, and she did take a step forward on a fig. You know, looking at figs, and I thought that she had a bit of a look at 12-1. Tom Amos, who has really gotten hot between Ellis and Saratoga, he sends up Badia, an Uncle Mo. That if this filly can translate to the synthetic, she's a player, Badia, right? 8-1.
Badia. That's a tall order, too, Steve. I mean, with no synthetic work or race, it's tough to do. Now, she does have a lot of synthetic breeding. She's Uncle Mo has sired 18% synthetic road winners, and the dam's produced two synthetic winners at Woodbine, but I prefer to see at least a turf work coming into it as opposed to a dirt work, because turf is, you know, obviously somewhat similar to synthetic racing. So I'm throwing her out. That said, I probably put her in the winner's circle by saying that, but it's just historically I don't see it's really tough to do. So
fair enough. How about with My Girl Della? This is our friend John Fielding. Anderson, I tell you, Anderson Farms. What about Anderson Farms with how many in here? One, two, three.
Yeah, a bunch of them.
Right? They bled at least three of these runners. Make it four.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I agree. My girl, she's a must-use in this race. We got Patrick Husband, who inherits a mount from Kimura. And she, I think she can close or she can go to the lead. She probably won't go to the lead in this spot, but I think she's quite tactical, and I think third time off the layoff could be the charm for her, too. Another horse to mention, really, is Hurricane Clara. I know Marty Drexler's really excited about the way she's come up to the race, and she won on Thursday Art Allowance last time out on the inner turf. He thinks she's maybe better on the Capita, so I could see her running big at... I'm 12-1 might be a little high on her morning line wise, but I think she's live, and she had a good work the other day on the Tapita. So except Savachi, Sahin Savachi won the Oaks last year on Elysium Field for Cassie.
Well, a big full competitive field for the Woodbine Oaks, 500,000, and you would expect to get some of these into the plate. Let's jump actually to the plate trial, which goes as the sixth. And let me actually give everybody the lay of the multi-race land. The pick five starts with the Trillium as opposed to the plate. The pick five has got the Trillium, the Connaught, the Oaks, and then the two late races, the Allowance 10th and the optional maiden 11th. But the plate trial, I was surprised. The 7-horse, I called it a 6-horse field earlier. I was surprised, Ron. This is usually a full gate.
Yeah, I mean, I think everyone's running against My Boy Prince.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
I mean, there are a couple of plate horses running today on the turf that, like an Orwelling horse, they split their 2 horses up. Joke Star is an Orwelling horse who is in the trial tomorrow. So, but really, My Boy Prince is, he's supposed to be in the lead here and just lead all the way. And I guess the question is, does he really want to go a mile and an eighth and against his group? It probably shouldn't be a problem. He's last year's Canadian champion, 2-year-old. The only time he ran around 2 turns, he was probably a really good 3rd in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf going a mile. So he's coming off back-to-back 7 furlong stakes wins with huge buyers, 97 in the King Quarry, and he won the Queenston last time with an 88. So this is his race to lose, really. And same connections as last year's play winner, Paramount Prince, Cassie, and Gary Barber. So he's a really good horse. It's just a question of the distance. But I think they left this race over to pick 5, I think, on purpose to make the pick 5 more challenging. It does start a pick 6 jackpot wager, though. So, and a maiden called Beautiful Sky, she was cross-entered in the Oaks and the trial. She doesn't get into the Oaks. She'll run in the trial here, not with much of a chance. But so the field could shrink to 6 if she draws into the Oaks.
Well, I'll tell you who does maybe have a chance. And even though the performance in the Marine went awry, Piper's Factor, the Vasileva Factor Colt, that race 2 back, where he actually beat Elders in May, I thought that, you look at that. That race fits pretty well against My Boy Prince.
Yeah, it really does. And he got an 85 buyer that day. I mean, he didn't run his race last time, and he has been inconsistent. So it's his day when he shows up. He's a good horse, and Patrick Cousins picks up the mount on him for this race, so he might be a good fit. This horse, I could see him rebounding and running 2nd to My Boy Prince. And the other contender is No More Options. I mean, there's a nice consistent horse coming off a 3rd in the Queenston, and the Queenston runner-up Essex Serpent came back to win the Grade 3 Marine.
Right.
So this is a nice horse, and the connections have gotten Edgar Zayas. They brought him up for the mount, and which I think says a lot. And Zayas is running. He's also riding Lunch with Bernie or Cassie in the Oaks,
yep.
I believe. But yeah, no more options. He's a really nice horse. I expect him to run well in this spot and go on to the plate for trainer Zelko Kretschmar, who trains the horse for his daughter, Mary Self is her name, who paid $5,000 for him, I think.
How about that?
Yeah. What a bargain by Frack Daddy. Yeah.
Unbelievable. Frack Daddy, son. Mm-hmm. Out of a birdstone.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah. Turning to the middle stakes between the Oaks and the trial, the Grade 3 Trillium and the Grade 2 Connaught Cup. And the Trillium, you're looking at fillies and mares, and they're going to go a mile and a 1/16.
Yeah, this looks like a rematch between Passionately Fab and Solo Album. They ran 1-2 in the Grade 3 Bell Mahone June 1st. And Passionately Fab going for her 6th stakes win in a row, believe it or not. And she's ridden by apprentice Pietro Moran, who rode her last time. He won 4 races on the card yesterday. So
pretty cool.
He's the up and coming apprentice here, Pietro, the son of jockey David Moran.
Right.
Sometimes they quite often they ride against each other in the same race.
That's fun.
So yeah. And so the album, she was one of the top 3-year-old fillies here last year, and she ran a bit bang up 2nd in the Bell Mahone after going to the lead. I think she really likes Woodbine. She doesn't run a bad one here very often, and she's been inconsistent elsewhere. My top pick in the race is Forever Dixie. I think at a price, she was 3rd in the Bell Mahone. she's coming off a fifth in a really tough addition to the Nassau, the Grade 2 Nassau on the turf. And like Cassie tells me, you know, this, she's a good horse when she decides she wants to run a race, and I'm just guessing that she's going to wake up with maybe her A game, and she's 10-1 on the line. So I like her a bit.
I don't blame you, and I'll tell you who else is just as competitive. You mentioned Edgar Zayas, and he's riding for Safi. That Batacuda is 8-1. What's wrong with Batacuda?
Yeah, you know, Safi wins every road but at Woodbine, believe it. He has a stable here. He's got like maybe 10 horses here. He's over 13 at the meet, so you know, after that, I just throw all his horses out, but it's baffling, really. I mean, he wins everywhere. He's hot as a pistol, but not here. But on paper, yeah, she's a contender, yeah.
Well, and Graham Motion, who has had set a couple up for stakes opportunities and has hit the boards, but five pounds coming out of the Gallarette behind Fluffy Socks, and you know, you're looking for a synthetic form. This is a horse that won at Kempton 2 years ago. This is a four-year-old Lord Conaloa filly, and won at Gulfstream over the winter. So she's got two synthetic wins around the world.
Yeah, 2-for-2 on synthetics, yeah, and picks up Rafael Hernandez. He's currently the leading rider here. He had a good last Sunday, so or Saturday. So, yeah, you can certainly make a case for her, too, Steve.
The Trillium came up very competitive, and I don't think you've got to eat the 2-1 or the 5-2 on Fashionably Fab and Solo Album, respectively. Let's talk about the Connaught Cup, and Marcus Hirsch, your colleague, of course, long time at the Forum. Marcus used the Connaught as one of his game plan races, and he went shopping for a price. I did, too. I'm interested in Capture the Lion for Cassie and Gary Barber. What are we doing in the Connaught?
Interesting. You know, Cassie supplemented Capture the Lion because he decided not to run Philo D'Arani in this race. And he told me he was going to send him to Colonial. And then he altered plans and supplemented him to this race. He loved his last win over the same course and distance, 7/8. So, you know, you can make a case, a pretty good case for him. You know, the obvious favorite is Flag of Honor. He's the top synthetic sprinter at Woodbine this year. Coming off a heat-to-wire win with a 98 buyer and the Chuck Cartier. 3-for-6 on turf in his native Australia. So Julia Carey thinks, the trainer thinks that maybe he's better on turf, which is kind of hard to believe because of his synthetic form is so good right now. And I suspect he left Australia because he couldn't run on Lasix there. And really, Woodbine's the ideal place to come if you want to run in stakes on Lasix. And this horse has just thrived since he's come here. She actually passed the Highlander Stakes with him a few weeks ago to have him pressure for this race. So he's a deserving favorite. Picks up Emma Wilson from Kimura. And Emma's ridden the horse twice before and didn't win, but was right there. So, but, yeah, he's 7-5 on the line. You know, maybe you key him or maybe you spread out. I don't know. The other Cassie in the race is First Empire, a first-time gelding coming off a year layoff. He was a really good two-year-old here back in 2021. He's worked very well, whether he needs one or not. I'm not sure. And Sappy's got Saratoga Flash in here. You know, on paper, it's second time off the layoff. He could be prominent. He almost won the Appleton, too, back at Gulfstream on the grass. So he gets Edgar Zayas, who has been his regular rider at Gulfstream.
A very good Connaught Cup. Marcus made the case for War Bomber, and 8-1 for me on Capture the Lion. War Bomber's 12-1. This is a really good introduction and preview leading to next month's play.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it's 4 weeks from this date, so yeah, it's going to be a fun card to watch. 11 race card, terrific set of races in this sequence.
Ron, you also you hit on two stories from the last, certainly since the last time we spoke. Moira came up regarding the Attard barn, and I thought she ran great. She did everything but win last week in the Diana.
Yeah, she was terrific, wasn't she? Off a long layoff.
Yep.
I mean, it was questionable. She's a year older. How good is she going to run off the long layoff? Well, she really did bring her A game, and I guess she, Kevin Attard told David Groening that she's going to run back here either in the Canadian or go to, I think, Colonial for the Beverly D, so one or the other. But, yeah, she's come back in great order, and it's good to see. She's really is a fan favorite here, the 2022 Horse of the Year and Queen's Plate winner that year.
Also, I should slip in with you the Emma Jane Wilson story from the fortnight and becoming the all-time leading money earner among female jockeys.
Yeah, that happened, I think, a week ago yesterday. She surpassed Julie Crone as the leading money-winning female rider with the earnings of around $90 million in U.S. Yeah, there was she did it for Roger Atfield in a win, by the way, not a placing. So that was cool to see for, you know, someone who's ridden her for a long time. And it was a 50 horse, too, that broke her maiden first time out. Emma's 42 years old, and she's still going strong. I could see her riding another 10 years. I mean, she's a very... very strong finishing rider. I mean, maybe the strongest finisher out Woodbine, believe it or not. She really is a terrific rider, and she doesn't have any plans to quit.
No, why would she? By any means.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Ron, I'm looking forward to getting up there, and it's been a while, and haven't had a chance to see a plate, so it'll be my first. And
some advice, don't go down to the traffic downtown Toronto is terrible right now, construction, and one of the main arteries into the city is there's a lane closed each way for the next 3 years. So if you're going to go downtown, I would take public transit. So the traffic in the city is a mess right now.
Well, I'm quite happy to tool around Etobicoke, and I don't need to run downtown. My decade-long life out of Montreal and plenty of Toronto experience. Although, you know what? I wouldn't mind catching the Jays. I've got to look at the schedule and see if the Jays overlap.
You can take the Up Express from the airport, or you can take an express bus from near the track to the subway. So, yeah.
All right.
It's very doable. Take a look at the schedule. See if the Jays are in town.
You're going to love it, because the last time I saw the Jays was at Exhibition Park. That gives you an idea. pretty funny, right?
Right. And Ron, I got to thank you for this preview, because I'm here to gamble this weekend, and on a packed weekend, I guess what? I'm starting to look at a couple of races that you went over. So Woodbine, you might get a few of my dollars on Saturday. Seriously, it's a great card. Real nice card.
I do love the card. I do. That late pick 5 looks appealing, and, you know, even the late pick 4, yeah. I mean, it really is a terrific card.
Well, and I'm just looking. The plate is what? What's our date?
17th.
The 17th.
17th of August.
Yeah, yeah. They're out of town. They come home afterward, and actually the Reds show up. Unbelievable. That would have been perfect. But all right, no Jays for me.
No They're Jays. Even talking about bringing Joey Votto up from the minors to maybe play in a game.
Wow.
Because he is in the organization, yeah. So I don't know if that's going to actually come to fruition. But he's from Etobicoke, Joey Votto. So.
That's pretty cool.
I play
against the Reds. That'd be wild. Ron Gierkink, everybody, and the action at Woodbine should be a terrific day on a wild Saturday. Monmouth, Saratoga, Woodbine, Del Mar. There's almost too much to choose from.
Yeah, Thanks for having me, Steve.
Thanks for the catching up. Ron Gierkink, everybody. Always a pleasure. Does a spectacular job and has for forever. I mean, one of the longest tenured DRF correspondents. And as you heard him reference, a horse owner and breeder himself, him and his family. We got a couple of minutes before I reach for Nick. So I'm going to turn to you. But I just saw something on Twitter that I'm absolutely going to trumpet. And then next week we'll get Jay Privman on, because Jay, in association with Karma, the California retirement organization, Jay has written a book, a children's book essentially, What Horses Do After Racing, The Story of Good Karma. And they're just releasing it, and I retweeted it. It's obviously all the money that comes out of it after costs, obviously, will go to Karma. This is fantastic. And I knew Jay was going to sneak this kind of thing in. You know?
Well, good for him. And so people know what Karma is. Karma is with a C in Southern California. California is the leading aftercare program that was started. Yeah. 10, 12 years ago, and it's been...
Maybe more now.
Maybe more. Madeline Arbach, a big push behind that, and it's grown and is one of the stalwarts of aftercare in the business, but definitely in California.
Outstanding, Jay. Great work, and he'll tell us all about it. What Horses Do After Racing, The Story of Good Karma, takes young readers on a journey through the lives of four racehorses: Good Karma, Stylish Samantha, Lovely Lucinda, and Silly Billy, who after their racing days are over find new homes and purposes. The main character, Good Karma, is a beautiful chestnut filly with a splash of white on her face and legs, making it look like she's wearing socks. The story showcases the horse's dreams of their future career. You can get it on Amazon, and I'm sure it'll be in all the bookstores, not just at Del Mar and Santa Anita, but I imagine it'll get... circulated to all the racetrack bookstores, etc., but you can get it right on Amazon. All proceeds benefit CARMA. Good job, Jay.
That's great. And I guess Dennis isn't coming down.
Being a full-time attorney, in addition to everything else that he has to do, so we're going to miss Dennis this year.
I had talked to him a little bit upstairs. And just was questioning at first, you know, I saw that Naira Betts is sponsoring the Haskell this year,
right?
And you had to know something else was in the works when you saw that. And of course, they signed up with Naira Betts as an ADW now in the state, which originally was just TVG only. For that, of course, some of the races are shown on Fox Sports 1. So I think the cooperation between the two states is a good thing to see. And I know it's benefited, it's probably benefited both, but the races being on the Fox Sports 1 show has really helped the handle here, and just made the Monmouth Park awareness has really gone up. And I think Dennis would have probably mentioned that, but I think, just like the fact that, two competing states that are next to each other are actually sitting down at the table and, doing business together is a good thing.
Well, the opportunity for the state to be, when we got here on Tuesday and Tom Lucci had, gave us that press release, it was really a revelation. Because New Jersey residents have been held captive, essentially, by the exclusivity deal with TVG. And that obviously, came to the end of its term, and now the marketplace will be open to everybody, which is fabulous. Competition and, Jersey residents, the four New Jersey bets, number four NJ bets, it was certainly a capable platform, but this is different. I mean, that for people that maybe moved to New Jersey from another state and suddenly found themselves,
handcuffed.
To use, whatever they were, whatever their ADW of choice was, this is significant, actually, and it'll mean extra handle out of New Jersey, guaranteed, because I'm sure there were players who just didn't want to didn't let their handle as much of their handle.
No, and surprisingly, for the geographically smallest of New Jersey, handles a lot of money.
Well, all you got to do is look at the sports betting. The New Jersey's numbers are mind-boggling.
They're way past what they thought.
Yes.
I think going in.
Well,
so.
Of course, you know, every for those of you that listened to the show for 15 years, you heard Dennis Drazen the entire court case, the entire PASPA case. We tracked every single minute, and Dennis was resolute that they would prevail. And Dennis Drazen and partners changed the landscape of betting in this industry.
I was going to say, you mentioned we got Nick on.
Yeah, we got Nick Tamaro. Nick.
Hi, Steve.
How you doing? It sounds like you're going to do this in the middle of a board meeting.
No. I'm going to retreat to a calm and quiet spot. The likes of your show deserves better.
Great to catch you. First of all, I want to give everybody your firsthand and family's experience with Beryl, and because you last week you said to me you were really, you were really buried by the storm. Power out for how long, and how did you guys fare?
Yeah, it was a rough few days, but we got through it. We were out of power from Monday morning at about 5:30 until Thursday evening at about 8, so p.m. So it was rough. You know, it was a storm that kind of. We were actually on a little vacation in Northern California, and I was watching the weather as time was going by, and by Saturday night, it became pretty clear we were going to get at least some kind of precipitation from this thing. So went home and moved everything out of the backyard and got ready for it. And, you know, the whole hurricane experience is very surreal because it's sort of like sitting in the middle of a washing machine and while it's on, because you're just hearing like wind and water whip around you the whole time. And I've lived through tornadoes, which that's like 10 minutes of terror. And hurricanes are just sort of like hours of nuisance. And so my fence fell down, you know, we lost power, fence is fixed, water heaters are back on, power's back on. So all passed. But I can guarantee you, if we see another one and the category is a little bit higher, you might be seeing me in Saratoga sooner.
Ah, I love it. Well, you know, and it's funny, Dick Powell, Wednesday, he said something that made me think of you, which was the generator. You know, that he's got a major generator at the house for such an occurrence. And, you know, in our area, a little heat, or more important, I guess worse, more cold. But for you guys to not have air conditioning down there for 4 days, and some people have been without for, 8 days, 9, 10 days?
Yeah, just about everybody's back online now. But, yeah some people, it lingered up to 8, 9 days. There's a couple of people that I work with that had gotten it back in the last few days. So, no, it's a long, long time. I mean, we were 16 days without power after Hurricane Ike in 2008. So, I mean, this is not unheard of by any means. The difference was that I came through in September when the temperatures are a little bit lower, and we're right in the heat of the summer right now. So it's funny, the people out there that have never experienced a hurricane won't realize it, but right after a hurricane passes through, it actually gets cool. So it was like 75 degrees all day long on last Monday, and the wind was still blowing, and it was actually a beautiful day. We kept the windows open at the house and just let it sort of air out. And then the problem was that, and it was right back normally is going to be, but fortunately I had some relatives that had power, so we were able to get the little one to a safe spot and get through it without an issue. So hopefully these stories that we're hearing about people mistreating linesmen and stuff that had come to town to help out, really was just the exception rather than the rule. Yikes. Houstonians are nice people and in general are tough and resilient, and so I don't want to hear much about that. So hopefully those stories are just a few bad ones rather than the rule in general. So moving on with it now.
Hey, you know, Nick Hammer here. I never really paid much attention to Houston weather till I moved to Hot Springs for a little bit to do Oakland, and I didn't. You got to be a tough cookie to live in the Houston area. You guys get a lot of flooding, and you get some remnants of hurricanes that you just had. I mean, so you got to keep your eye on it, right? And then you get the heat in the summertime. So, you know, more power to you for hanging in there.
Jesus.
Yeah, no, it's a rough place to live weather-wise. I think our heat is a little overrated in the sense that, yeah, it's hot, but, I mean, it's not terribly hotter in Houston than it is in Dallas or Oklahoma City or, you know, New Orleans or any place like that. The humidity is the problem for the most part. But yeah, we've had a pretty reliable Houston summer in 2024, maybe minus Beryl, but we're getting a lot of rain. We get a lot of afternoon showers. It's very similar to what you would get in South Florida. An afternoon shower that does nothing to cool it off. It actually makes it absolutely miserable once it passes through. And then, yeah, I mean, you'll watch the Sam Houston feed when you could watch the Sam Houston feed when cooler heads were in charge back in the winter. And, I mean, we had nights in the winter where it was in the 30s and 40s, and, you know, it's and at that point in Houston, that's like a five-alarm fire, right? I mean, 50 is freezing in Texas, so you get below 50, and you might as well just write the whole damn thing off.
Whatever happened to the cicadas? Did they ever hit?
We have. You should see the cornucopia of bugs going on. I had the bug man come out on Wednesday because I was like, Jesus, this thing got everything going. And yeah, we have a little creek next to our house, and so everything flying around was just totally out of control.
Well, you could pick up the Jason Beam photograph of oddball bugs on the race caller window. The classic.
Like a windshield
Jason.
Going through Texas.
Oh, my God. Don't know where you're headed, actually. I think a little Monmouth, a little Saratoga?
Yeah, sure. I mean, all this good racing in Monmouth, tough to not at least want to spend some time talking about that, for sure. I mean, look, I think, you know, this whole Haskell thing is getting a little exhausting with between Doorknock drawing the rail and the Rapoli and Fletcher clan not really being completely open about who's running. I mean, I think it's safe to assume that Doorknock is going to run and Fierceness is going to scratch.
Yeah.
And I think Mindframe is going to win. I think it's just that simple. I think the opportunity for Doorknock to beat Mindframe existed in the Belmont. I don't envision it happening again. Mindframe was just so erratic down the stretch. He was tired. But I'll tell you, Steve, I mean, looking at the past performances and Hammer as well and the speed figures and stuff, that race for Doorknock really came out of nowhere, and it's the kind of race that I'm going to bet against happening again. So I think Mindframe will win. I think the play in here is to try and slide Timberlake in the exacta, because this is a really surprising and really interesting entrant. I noticed, and it looked like in a picture I saw on Twitter as well, that Brad Cox is at Monmouth. This is just I tweeted this the other day.
Yeah.
I'm shocked to see this horse in this race. This is a very un-Brad Cox-like move, right?
Yeah, you said it, and I brought it up yesterday on the air. I said Nick had a very interesting observation.
And it almost makes you wonder. I mean, this is the kind of horse that you could have seen Brad point to the Dwyer. He could have looked at maybe even trying the Amsterdam in an effort to get him to the Jerkins. And maybe the Jerkins is the goal, and he'll be a nifty cutback in a race like that. But I don't know. He's apparently training very well, and he's a horse that certainly had some brushes with success. He didn't get the most ideal trip in the Arkansas Derby. I do think he moved a little early. I think we all kind of assumed that he had distance limitations coming out of that. But I don't know if it's necessarily as much of a worry at a place like Monmouth, where you're going to be getting a bit quicker mile in an eighth than you will just about anywhere else. So I want to give him an opportunity to maybe upset this thing a little bit. I'll use him in some of my multis as a backup, and I'll squeeze him in the exacta underneath Mindframe. I won't use Doorknock. I'm going to need him to prove that last race to me. And I think, quite honestly, the goal from the Plunkett camp is going to be to make sure Tuscan Sky is latched onto him early and quickening this thing up as much as possible, because that gives Mindframe just a much better target to run at later on.
I should mention, I made reference to it, the cross country tomorrow is the all stakes pick four, the Wolf Hill, the Monmouth Cup, the UN, the Haskell, and then between the UN and Haskell, the Lake George at Saratoga. So, Nick, do the Lake George, and then we'll work our way back from the United Nations.
Yeah, Lake George is a really good race and one that's very, very competitive. I'm actually of the opinion that the Coaching Club American Oaks is a little bit more competitive than people are making it out to
be.
I don't think that the Rapido Anna is a fait accompli, but the Lake George is a really interesting race. You've got horses coming out of the Wonder again. You've got horses coming out of the Wild Applause. And it's pretty tough to ignore that Oversubscribed ran very well in the Wild Applause. She was deep in the pack. They were flying out front. I don't know if the pace will be quite as fast this time around, but I really don't know how much it matters. And so I think she's clearly a deserving favorite. Sweet Rebecca was an easy horse to bet against in the Wonder Again, off a perfect trip win in the Memories of Silver. I thought she was a little overrated into that spot. I'm interested in seeing if Gayla Brand really rebounds a little bit. She was bad in the Wild Applause, obviously lost contact early and never really put forth much of a run, but now she's second off a layoff, maybe a little bit more interesting. I think the horse that you want to bet out of the Wonder Again is Vivouve, who was close to that pace, stayed on, really fought on all the way to the finish, and is probably a little bit better suited to the mile. So I think I'm going to end up picking her. I seem to fall for way too many of these Jack Sisterson horses, because it seems like they all end up training well also. But she's going to be the best price of the horses who can win. I imagine at the end of the day, my tickets will have at least a 2, 4, and 5. I'll probably back up with the 3 and 6. Of the Mama Stakes, I mean, I think the Wolf Hill's really fun, right? I mean, there's a number of horses in here who can win. I seem to always want to give the Jorge Duarte horses an extra look sprinting on the turf. And Nothing Better did show a little bit of a different dimension last time at Churchill, sitting a little bit off the pace. Arzak's the horse to beat, no doubt about it. I rad back on. This is a horse that I've grown quite a fondness for, and I'm glad that he was able to get up for second in the Jaipur last time out. He really just doesn't need to bring his racetrack with him. He runs every place he goes. So I'm looking forward to seeing if he's able to take another step forward. I think you can keep that race relatively simple with those two. And Highland Falls is supposed to win the Monmouth Cup. The concern here is what you do with Tappa Trice, who's finally supposedly going to make his 2024 debut after being pointed to a couple of different spots. There's really not much in here beyond those two. I think if anybody else were to make noise, maybe it would be Stage Raider, but boy, he has to improve a lot off of a ho-hum performance last time out in the Salvatore Mile, and really three straight pretty awful efforts. So I think you can be somewhat thin there. I got to tell you, I love Tawny Port in the UN. I'm really looking forward to betting this horse. I thought he got all kinds of the wrong ride last time out, getting shoved into that race at every point of call, fast-paced race. The pace fell apart. He stayed on all the way. He's a true distance horse. And this feels to me like a situation where Flavien Prat can take him back a little bit, let him produce that late run. He's going to be a good price as well, because this is a super competitive race on paper. And my problem, Stephen, and I don't want to be over-handicapping this, but Jose Ortiz opting to ride Farbridge over Web Slinger is a really unfortunate thing for Web Slinger, because I don't want to beat up too much on Luis Saez. I know I tweeted about him struggling yesterday, but long on the grass with off-the-pace horses is not his – that's not his thing.
No, he likes to be in the flow.
Yes, he likes to be in the flow. He wants to be forwardly placed. And I think the thing that Jose was able to do last time out with Web Slinger is really show an incredible amount of patience with him to let him really produce that late run, because all we had kept seeing over and over were these balcony moves, left and right, 5 wide on the turn, 6 wide on the turn, trying to sweep the field every time, and you just give up such an advantage to everybody else in doing so. But this is a horse with a lot of talent, so I'm going to have to use him a little bit as a backup. I will not be beaten by him. I will not be beaten by Farbridge either, who I think might just excel at an 11 furlong type trip, but as far as I'm concerned, from a betting perspective, I'm going to bet Tawny Port to win. I'm going to use those three in some capacity in the multi-race bets. And I'm going to be happy if I get alive to Mind Frame and maybe for about as third as many units to Timberlake.
Who were the three beside? Who were the two beside Tawny Port?
Two of them on the outside, 10 and 12, Web Slinger and Farbridge. Not terribly interesting from a price perspective, but, I mean, Tawny Port is my horse from a win angle.
So let me run these down then. This is the cross country that starts with the Wolf Hill, 5-8, and then as A's, then maybe the 3 as an A, the 8 as a B, and the 1 as a C in the Cup. Strong A with Tawny Port and sort of an A-minus B pluses for the 10 and the 12. So the 9 with the 10, 12. Then in the Lake George, 2, 4, 5 as A's, 3, 6 as B's or C's, and 4, 7. More 7 and 4 as your Haskell plays. Excellent. Nick, outstanding. Anything else you made reference? We got about 35 seconds. You made reference to Torpedo Anna. You're not convinced that Candide or Leslie's Road can't beat her?
I think Candy could beat her. I think there's a world in which she could do that. I like that Todd took a little bit of an easier path to getting to these Grade One races. And I'll tell you, Steve, Candy took a lot of money in that Ashland. And that means there's definitely some algorithmic stuff at play that likes Candy. And her speed figures really put her in line, especially that 99 buyer last time out. And look, I mean, it's the guy's having an unbelievable year. I have tremendous respect for what he pulled off on Oaks weekend and Derby weekend. But Kenny McPeak's not really had an easy time keeping horses at a high level for a long period of time. And Torpedo Ann has run well every single time. So at some point, she's going to have an off day. Malathak got beaten in this race by a horse who would have beaten her probably once in her entire career. So it can happen, and we've seen this happen at Saratoga pretty frequently. So I wouldn't just hand the race to Torpedo Ann.
Nick Tamaro, everybody, NTAM 1215. Nick, thanks. We'll talk next week.
Thanks, guys.
See you, Nick.
Good luck.
Nick Tamaro, folks, and there it is. Thanks to Tom Lucci and John Himes and everybody at Monmouth. Hammer, thanks for a couple of fabulous days.
Always a pleasure.
Enjoyed
it. We'll do it again next week.
Exactly, but we'll be in Iowa. That's a little different. Thanks to Nick and Ron Gierkink, James Scully, Steve Anderson, Marcus Hirsch, Brad Free as well. And there's your Twin Spires weekend preview. Laurel's got a couple of nice stakes. Callie asked me to mention that on Sunday. They're back. And Beat Bic will be the San Clemente and the Chuvie. Beat Bic week two, the San Clemente. And I went for that crazy price. And the Chuvie, Shotgun Hottie for Cherie. What else is there? We're going to head out. Tina and I got to get home. We got the grandchildren. And we'll see everybody loose on the lead Sunday with Seth and I. And that's it. Thanks.
Drive safe.
Thanks, everybody. Talk to you Monday.
Black sheep of the angels riding down the line. We think there's a song.